I feel like I don't think I have to run for us to be successful. I'm very confident in our running backs. It is what it is. They choose to, take me out of it. I got to hand the ball off. I can't control the ball after that. I got to hand the ball off.
That was Kyler Murray of the Arizona Cardinals Sunday following the loss to New England in Foxborough, 20-17. And it was definitely more glaring in the first half of that game, Bick. The lack of running production from Kyler Murray in the first two quarters of that game, minus 2 yards rushing. Picked it up and had 33 yards rushing in the second half to finish with 31. But certainly wasn't a key ingredient in the amount of production that the Cardinals got. They relied more on the traditional run game, and it was just, kind of a lackluster offensive performance all the way around for the Cardinals.
Yep.
But I know Kyler Murray, him saying that, I don't think I need to run to be successful offensively. I know a lot of Cardinals fans are hoping for that, when he can be the type of reliable drop back pocket passer. But I just don't think it's there yet. When the Cardinals were flying high, and individually Kyler Murray was getting all this MVP discussion around him, It was a combination of the both. Yeah, he was throwing the ball well, but it just seemed like so much more had opened up because he was able to run the ball and make plays with his legs as well.
Well, yeah, and that's now become item number one on Cliff Kingsbury's agenda. How do you lift this offense that has had its legs taken out from underneath it, literally and figuratively? And that is taking away the chunk plays from Kyler Murray. So, as I mentioned earlier, Josh Weinfuss tracked a few of these trends, and they're kind of interesting to me. What you have seen starting in the Miami game with Brian Flores, you've seen Kyler Murray face more and more blitzes, more and more pressure. The Patriots blitzed Kyler Murray on 35.9% of his dropbacks. The fourth straight week, he has been blitzed more than 35%. Miami started the run, blitzing Murray on 46.9% of his dropbacks. Buffalo followed up with 42.5%. Seattle dipped to 34%. That's all from Josh Weinfuss's story.
But that follow-up note, too, over the past four games, an average of 39% of the time Murray is blitzed. In the first seven games, only 17%. So, boom. There's a light bulb. There's a red flag, whatever right. You want to call it,
yep.
That obviously has to be high on the list of priorities for the Cardinals offensive staff to attack that blitz, whether it's with Kyler Murray on design runs,
mm-hmm.
running through the blitz, or passing over the blitz. I mean, that's because we've seen a different-looking offense the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
There's no denying
yes.
that.
Yeah, and so now the pressure becomes this. Okay, so, and we saw on Sunday, Kyler Murray look kind of skittish and make plays, bad plays, poor technique plays. He made good plays with bad technique. All of it was stemmed from pressure, and the pressure that he felt and the pressure that he's been feeling for the last month or so. So that's item number one. How does Cliff Kingsbury, as a quarterback groomer, offensive guru, how does he teach Kyler Murray to burn the blitz? Kurt Warner famously loved to be blitzed because uh-huh. that meant one less, maybe two less, defenders out in coverage, and if he knew where to go with the football, he had a chunk play waiting on a silver platter for him. And so that's what Kyler Murray's got to do now. How do I deal with this pressure productively? How do I make them pay? How do I not run backwards and throw the ball away? How do I negate this? And then once he does that, the pressure's going to lighten up. Until he does that, it's only going to get worse. So that's step number one that's going to have to happen with Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm. Here's Cliff Kingsbury yesterday during his press availability on the subject of his quarterback being blitzed more lately.
Yeah, I think when you look league-wide, that's kind of the trend right now. Is teams, a lot of them are doing those zero pressures and trying to sell out and get hits on the quarterback and get the ball out of guys' hands. When they, instead of letting them run around and make plays. So I don't know if it's specific to the Cardinals, but I feel like we've had our moments since the pressure and like to have some plays back against it as well. But week in, week out, you just never know what you're going to see.
Yeah, and he might be onto something. I haven't seen the break. I mean, I agree with you. I think Josh Weinfuss did a great job of breaking that down specific to the Cardinals, but I haven't seen the numbers against other teams. If there is truth in what Cliff Kingsbury says, that it's a league-wide trend, you know, but it has been noticeable against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals in the last few weeks.
Okay, now item number two, containing Kyler Murray with the mush-rushing tactics that we've seen. Bill Belichick took it to another level over the weekend by having guys just stand in place, jump up and down, trying to time their jumps to deflect or intercept passes or block his vision, and it worked. So how do you negate that? Justin Pugh, after the game in a Zoom call with reporters, he was asked about that, and he basically said, we've got to, as offensive linemen, dump them. What he meant was offensive linemen are taught that whenever you're blocking a D lineman who's playing that kind of defense, you got to hit him in the stomach. Mm-hmm. That'll get their arms done right away. There are ways for an offensive lineman to negate defensive players employing those tactics. And so the offensive line is going to have to be better at that.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where, you know, after this 2 weeks especially, and I do believe, as we sit here and have this discussion, that the injury to Kyler Murray's shoulder has been significant in all of this. I do believe that. And hopefully another week, you know, where he came out pretty much unscathed against the Patriots, another week of recuperation and strengthening will get him back into a better mindset. But I think that's a factor. But I'm fascinated to see now, going into this game against the Rams, who have had success against the Cardinals. Their defense has looked monstrous at times this year.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a guy like Aaron Donald up front creating havoc and a guy on the back end of Jalen Ramsey creating havoc, that's a formidable defense. I'm real curious to see what the adjustments look like from Cliff Kingsbury, because now the ball is in his court. This is time to zig or zag, because it looks like the last few opponents for the Cardinals have zigged and created a different looking offense.
And I would think that as defenses have kind of narrowed and limited Kyler Murray, I think they've done the same with Cliff Kingsbury. I think some of Cliff's tendencies have kind of been laid bare. And I think that, you know, the predictable running plays late in games, there are things that he needs to get better at doing. I heard Max Starks this morning talk about you need to find places to go in moments of high leverage that are not these little wide receiver screen passes. You've got to find better ways. If you're going to continue to put yourself in third and short situations, which this team does very well, you've got to find a way to pick those things up.
I mean, better yet, avoid all those third and short, fourth and short situations.
Yeah.
It seems like they've just been inundated with those type of scenarios over the past few weeks. A lot has been made, too, of, you know, Cliff Kingsbury saying, hey, we're going to take what the defense gives us. He elaborated on that philosophy yesterday. And the question from the show was, can there be too much buy into that? Take what the defense gives you. Does that kind of make you less sharp, less aggressive offensively?
Yeah, I'm not sure of too much buy-in. You obviously, when you have the opportunity to hit the big shots, you want to be able to hit them. And, at times you don't, and at times you kind of have to have these 20-play drives. You'd like to have more of some quick strike hits at times, but that wasn't the way the game went, unfortunately. But, you know, we have the ability to do that. We've shown it. And I think that you'll see that the remainder of the season, those plays will reemerge. It's just been a couple weeks where we haven't really been able to break loose on those.
Yeah, and I will say this, optically, when you do go 2 weeks, you know, you think back to the Dallas game, quick strike, one pass, 80 yards to Christian Kirk. So there is capability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go 2 weeks, to use your terminology again, where pretty much everything is happening in that little rectangle in the middle of the field, it seems like years since we've seen the Cardinals push the ball down the field. We certainly saw that at the beginning of the year. I think we saw it at the beginning of last year, and things kind of evolved as the season went on, creating all this optimism that that's going to be business as usual for this year. But you know, there's guys on the other side of the ball, coaches and players, that are trying to prevent that from happening. But, man, it just seems like this has been it seems like longer than 2 weeks since we've seen the Cardinals try to force the issue offensively.
Well, and it's disappointing only in the fact that going up against Seattle at that time, that Seattle defense was very vulnerable, and that Patriots defense was there for the taking if they could have put together a coherent passing game the way the Texans had done previously. I had forgotten about Mike Reese from ESPN.com in Boston. How he had basically told us, look, if you as Cardinal fans feel comfortable about Kyler Murray standing in the pocket and completing passes, then you might have a field day against this Patriots team, and if you can't do that, you might struggle. Well, that's exactly what we saw. We got the worst-case scenario out of it. One of the interesting things to me, Vinny, is Cliff Kingsbury, when he was elaborating on this offense, he kind of pulled back a curtain and started talking about precision elements of this offense that are not being met, wide receivers not being in the right places at the right times, that kind of stuff. That would go a long way in explaining some of Kyler Murray's frustrations.
Well,
I'll tell you that much.
Absolutely, and I think we had a caller yesterday during the one-minute warning who brought that up, the spacing among wide receivers down the field. There's times where, you know, ball's going up to a receiver and there's two, maybe sometimes three guys in the general area.
Yep.
It's certainly, it doesn't look right. I don't think it is right. And you're right. That would lead to frustration from the quarterback. If the assignments aren't being run properly, and it looks bad on the quarterback and it looks bad on the offense as a whole, I'd be pretty frustrated by that too.
It's really kind of a fundamental problem that the Cardinals have this year that generally you do not get with young quarterbacks. The problem they have is that Kyler Murray knows this offense better than anybody else on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And that is leading him to frustration. Generally, it's the young quarterback who's swimming, who, you know what I mean, who's frustrating his teammates. You're getting the difference here, I think, with the Cardinals, and I think all this frustration's flowing together. And I think if there was ever any frustration from Kyler Murray about DeAndre Hopkins' practice habits, it had nothing to do with wanting DeAndre Hopkins next to him, but it had everything to do with having an offense with people in the right spots at the right time. And if Kyler Murray knows all of this and is truly mastered this offense and his receivers are letting them down, that could lead to a lot of this.
Yeah.
For what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, and if you want to talk about timing being ideal, we've both been kind of waiting, pulling the Judge Smales on this. Well, we're waiting. When's that 45-point game where everything clicks and the offense just looks like it's getting closer to that ceiling? You've seen glimpses of it. We haven't seen it for a full game yet. Wouldn't the timing of that this Sunday be perfect against a team like the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a chance for, this is a big pivotal game for this football team. I've said this repeatedly throughout the course of the season. You get back to 500, you are just confirming that you are nothing special. And if the fact that this team is one Hail Mary away from a four-game losing streak right now, it's got to end right now. And maybe they're getting the Rams at a good time. Maybe they're not. The 49ers gave you a pretty good blueprint on how to play him defensively. Mm-hmm. This is another monumental moment for this team.
Text HOP, H-O-P, to 620-620 for your chance to win an autographed DeAndre Hopkins football along with an Oars and Alps fresh kit. That's HOP to 620-620. Message and data rates may apply.
Everybody tried to hand us the Lombardi Trophy in August. You know, you just don't throw guys out there with names. You got to practice. You got to learn to get in sync with each other. That takes time.
That is Bruce Arians, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, after another loss by the Bucs. They're another team in that losing 3 of 4 stretch that we've talked about after they fell to the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. This is getting very, very interesting with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because this is a weekly, pretty much daily talking point, is the relationship between Bruce Arians and Tom Brady. You know, there was a lot of people that looked at that relationship from the beginning, just in terms of philosophy. Tom Brady, not necessarily a fling it down the field quarterback. We know that that Bruce Arians likes to take those chances. In terms of play calling, BA once famously said, well, several times, but he said it on our show plenty, I'll give up play calling duties when I find somebody who's better than it at it than me.
Mm-hmm.
Then he hands it down to Byron Leftwich. And then this week, he admits, yeah, Tom Brady's pretty much calling his own plays out there. In the grand scheme of where the NFC is as a conference, there's been a lot of shuffling at the top. There seems to be different teams that are mentioned as real players every week. And Tampa Bay was in that mix at one time, but I don't throw the Bucs into that mix anymore. It seems like their chemistry issues or building towards chemistry is slowing them down too much. And maybe Bruce Arians is right. You need time to gel. But they don't look like they're gelling. They look like they're going in the opposite direction.
Well, they certainly do not seem, this offense does not seem to be a great fit for Tom Brady. And I'm sorry if they didn't see this coming a mile away. Bruce Arians likes big, tough pocket quarterbacks who will absorb punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady will stand in the pocket, and he's tall. He does not like to absorb punishment one bit. And so that's the deal. And the state of his arm right now is such that he's not going to be successful throwing the ball over the top, over the top, over the top. Then you've got some speculation now that this thing is getting to the point now where Tom Brady knows from experience that he can't cause a public scene with any of this, but it might get to the point where one of them has to depart next season, and it's not going to be the quarterback. BA may have to step aside from this thing if this thing flames out in Tampa, just because there's already been a lot of water under the bridge. There's been a lot of comments from BA that have, you know, somebody wrote this line, and this is so true. It's like Bruce Arians looked at Tom Brady as sort of a superhero action figure. And then when he met him in person, he was like, oh, you're not that big. You're supposed to be a superhero.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of his disappointments are like, okay, you're Tom Brady. Why are you missing open receivers? Why are you misreading coverage? And I think for Tom Brady, it's compounding a problem he had coming to Tampa, and this guy's too achieved. The thing with his disagreements with Bill Belichick is it eventually led to success in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
If this doesn't lead to success in Tampa, I see a parting of the ways here.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, that for 20 years, I think you're right on the money, too. The disagreements with Bill Belichick finally led to success.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Belichick's a defensive guy. There might be a little bit of concession there. Okay, you know what? Let's see what you're saying. If it holds water, Bruce Arians is an offensive guy and a proud offensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be the best mixture there.
No,
Tampa Bay. I would never say this at the beginning of a season, looking at a team's schedule and saying, "Well, they got their bye in week 13." That's never a good thing, but that's the case for Tampa Bay right now. They're going into their bye week this week, one of the last two teams to have a bye. And it worked out pretty well for them because it's unraveling, and I think they need time just to clear their heads. And they're still a playoff team right now. They're the sixth seed in the NFC.
I know. Here's the difference. If I was looking at the NFC right now, I would say, okay, at the very top, you probably have New Orleans and Seattle maybe in a dead heat, maybe Seattle past them, Green Bay not far behind. Then afterwards, maybe L.A., Tampa, the Cardinals, the 49ers, the Vikings, and whoever wins the NFC East. But if you were going to rank these teams by quarterbacks, you'd have the Cardinals much higher up that list. In fact, you'd probably go Green Bay 1, Seattle 2, Cardinals 3. And with all due respect to Drew Brees, I think he's showing age very much the way Tom Brady is.
He's out now, so.
Right, and he's out, and he's injured. Exactly. And you see right now that Taysom Hill is not all that much of a quarterback.
But they don't lose games.
They haven't. You're right.
They had a bye week this past week, basically, playing against Denver. The Saints didn't have to throw the ball either. But I think it's noteworthy Over the last 2 years, the New Orleans Saints have played 7 games without Drew Brees, and they are undefeated in those games.
Yeah.
That says something to me.
And to me, the biggest hope for the Arizona Cardinals is to somehow slog through all these developmental potholes and hurdles of the season and get into the playoffs, where if you are among the last 4 teams in or the last 3 teams in, depending on how many teams actually make it, in that lower quadrant of teams, the Cardinals are going to have the best option at quarterback, and quarterbacks can win you games by themselves. So if they can get in, I would only put Green Bay and Seattle as clearly ahead of them. I wouldn't put Tampa clearly ahead of the Cardinals in a quarterback derby, or the Saints, or the Rams, or the Vikings, or the 49ers. So if the Cardinals can get there, they've got a shot to really kind of end this thing with a bang, if you will.
Piggybacking off of the last conversation we had against Kyler Murray, I appreciate your optimism in saying that, and you might not be off, but I got to see more from Kyler Murray
turning
this around before I'm ready to anoint that as being the case.
Well, but I'm saying that on the premise that to make the playoffs, they're going to have to get to a better level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then once they get there, they're going to have the quality of quarterback that only a few teams can top, and that can go a long way in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as it shakes out now, the old phrase, if the season were to end today, it's not. But if it did, the Cardinals would be on the road playing at Green Bay.
Yeah.
So that's why this game against the Rams is enormous, because as it stands right now, the Rams in that first round, they would go on the road to take on the NFC East champs, the Giants, who are 4-7. That's where you want to be. if you're going to be a wild card team, you want to be that top wild card team right now, because you want to play the East champion. It's a weak division with bad football teams, but the Cardinals are not there right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the big point is that we're entering the month of December now, and we've seen a lot of shifts already in the NFC. Maybe the best is yet to come for the Cardinals. Let's hope.
I'm curious. I want to go back to something you said earlier, too, and correct me if I'm wrong. You'd put the Seahawks above the Packers right now?
Yeah, I would.
I think it's an interesting discussion, because the Packers, when they've looked good, they look phenomenal, mm-hmm. and then they've had a couple of games where you wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks, with their defensive uprising in the last couple weeks, it creates an interesting, I mean, they have the same record. The Packers do have the 2 seed right now. Seahawks are 3, but I saw an article today, Bic, that argues the best 5 teams in football are all in the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to go there. I might go top 3 because of what Tennessee's been doing lately.
Mm-hmm.
But the top 3 of the NFC right now, Saints, Packers, Seahawks, all look pretty formidable to me as well.
Well, yeah, listen, but what are you going to get with the Saints at quarterback? I mean, if you put the Saints up against, say, the Packers, or you put them up against the Seahawks, I don't think they're going to handle that very well. I think they might be flawed come the postseason. But if you're looking in the AFC, clearly Kansas City's reminded people that don't mess with us. Pittsburgh, you can't argue with unbeaten.
Although people are.
And then Tennessee has been remarkably resilient, and they've got in a team that's built for the playoffs with the way they play.
And they know exactly who they are, and they stick to that identity.
They've got a great offensive line. They've got just a moose of a running back. I mean, that in a good way.
Moose.
Right, Rocco. Moose.
Yeah, they need a fullback named Rocco.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't every team does?
Yeah, coming up next, it's a Tuesday, so we will play a round of mustache. Not a mustache. It's Bickley and Murata. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford Poll Question on the homepage at arizonasports.com. How many remaining regular season games will the Arizona Cardinals win? They got 5 left. So your choice is 4 or 5, 2 or 3, 0 or 1.
I would vote I'm going to be relatively optimistic and say three, Vinny.
All right, two or three. That's the middle category. That's where I would fall as well. I feel more comfortable saying two, which would be 8-8. Not great, but 65% of the respondents are in that group. Two or three more wins.
Yeah, listen, and that would be the name of the Cardinals' biography in 2020. 8-8, not great. That's what it would be.
Yeah. 24% say they will not win again or win only one game. 11% say four or five wins. That is today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You can find it. You can vote on it right now. It's on the homepage at arizonasports.com.
Mustache. Not a mustache.
A mustache, a mustache, a mustache. Big mustache, thick mustache. My mustache, your mustache. Say the word mustache. A mustache, a mustache. Now we both have said mustache. A mustache, a mustache. If you only got a mustache.
That's your mom and she's got a mustache.
All right, it is that time of week for America's fastest growing facial hair related quiz sensation, mustache. Not a mustache. There you go.
extra dramatic pause.
Absolutely,
this week.
Absolutely.
That was Secrestian.
I took the cue from you there, Carlin.
I loved it. So yes.
How mustache is it?
I will play a sound bite. Could be from an interview, from a movie, could be a song, and you'll have to tell me whether the person talking or singing has a mustache or does not have a mustache. And if you identify the person, you will get a bonus point. 2 points per question. First one to 10 wins. All those caveats that I always say,
yeah,
but
right.
But we know the drill here.
Uh-huh.
All right, so we'll start.
Do we?
We do. We do.
If I run out of questions, or if we run out of time, or if it's a tied, we'll
You're
go
gonna
to
wing it. Exactly.
Yep.
That's
all right.
We
so
do.
We'll start with a musical question, and we'll start with Dan Bickley here.
Okay.
All right, Bick.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight, 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.
That would be Elton John. That would be Rocket Man. Now, I'm trying to remember if that stage, what facial hair he had going on at that point in time. But I'm going to guess not a mustache.
That's correct. I don't think he ever had a mustache. He had
just those
sideburns. Yeah,
things.
Absolutely. But you are correct. Two points for you. All right, Vinny?
She packed my bags. Last night, pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high. As a kite by then.
Oh, I am taking it. I've never heard that audio before. But judging from what I know, what I'm gonna guess,
okay.
I'm gonna go William Shatner, not a mustache.
Wow.
Well deductive reasoning at its finest, right there.
Good.
That's how you play mustache, not a mustache, right there. Okay, that is it. Context clues and everything.
That is it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's a good way
to
put it.
2-2. Let's go with a musical one for you. You could just give me the band here, but if you know the singer, you
okay.
Call you up.
That would be a song called Runaway Train. That would be a group called Soul Asylum, and that singer would not have a mustache.
Yes, well done.
What is the singer's name, by the way?
I don't remember. I can see him. I can picture him.
His last name was Pilner, I think. I just closed it, but I believe it was Pilner. All right.
He should have added an S and been Pilsner. That would be cool.
Yeah. That would be cool. People are just not cool anymore. All right, let's go.
David Perner was his name.
David Perner.
Yeah.
All right. Here you go. For you, Vinny. Where the hell is the one I want to play?
Here we go, winging it.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know where I put it. Okay, forget that. That's so frustrating. I had it all set up and I forgot.
Yeah.
All right, never mind this. All right, Vinny, I'm sorry this is taking so long and annoying. Okay, here we go.
Generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
This sucker's electrical. but I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts!
That is Christopher Lloyd as Dr. Emmett Brown, not a mustache.
Correct. You got it. All right. Dan?
Mm-hmm.
4-4, by the way.
Yep, Dan.
You must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
You retired too?
You must be Ringo. Look, darling, Johnny Ringo. The deadliest pistolier since Wild Bill, they say. What do you think, darling? Should I hate him?
That would be, I think you've given me this clue before. That would be
not this clue, but
Val Kilmer, definitely a mustache.
That is correct from Tombstone. I gave you the I'm your Huckleberry.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
We're getting deep into the quote list of Tombstone.
Yeah. I think
two docs in a row there was the gimmick.
I think your inventory of clues is getting depleted.
Well, I have had to double up for the first time in the last couple of weeks, but all right. Vinny?
Mm-hmm. I like an escalator, man, because an escalator can never break. It can only become stairs. There would never be an escalator temporarily out of order sign. Only an escalator temporarily stairs. Sorry for the convenience.
That is the late, great Mitch Hedberg. Not a mustache.
That is always such a great observation, too, because I've seen that at airports when escalators shut down, they, like, close them up.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need to do that. Yeah.
That is Mitch Hedberg with a mustache, though, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, that's lame.
I believe it's Comedy Central special.
Oh.
That's freaking lame.
Oh.
I know. I'm sorry. Yeah. This is not.
Right.
This is
you are sorry, Jarrett.
Okay.
All right. Dan?
Uh-huh.
I'm a modern man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free, a diversified multicultural postmodern deconstructionist, politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced, I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond.
That is the eternally underrated George Carlin with the mustache.
That is correct. That's a great bit. It goes on for about 3 minutes there.
Yeah.
Surprised you didn't play at all.
You got under his skin, Carlin.
All right, Vinny?
Hedberg had stubble in that special. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sitting on his bar stool talking like a damn fool.
That is Tommy Shaw from Styx.
So good.
And you're giving me a guy with fluctuating facial hair again. I'll guess not a mustache.
Not a mustache is correct. You got it.
Fluctuating facial hair.
Now.
All right.
I'm sailing away. Set an open course for the virgin sea.
I'm sorry.
Dan.
Uh-huh. I don't know. Is that Eric Cartman singing it?
No,
I don't know. I don't know
not.
Who that is. I don't know.
Well, you could still guess.
Not a mustache.
No. That was also Styx, but
Dennis was DeYoung.
Dennis DeYoung with a mustache.
Oh.
So we are now.
That's really weird. Okay.
So we're right back in it here.
A lot of Styx talk on this show.
That was really, really weird.
Well, I'm a really weird guy. All right, Vince?
Dan still leads 8-7, is that correct?
That's what I have.
Yeah.
Vince?
Uh-huh.
You need this.
I just want to apologize to everybody for asking for that trade in the middle of the season. I'm here to stay, baby.
That is Patrick Peterson. Mustache.
That is correct.
Uh-oh.
And finally, for the win, Dan.
Dude, the older you get, the faster it goes. You know, you look up and I look at Dan Bickley and his hair is turning all white. You know, when I first met him, it was still black.
Was my hair ever black? Larry Fitzgerald, not a mustache.
No. Larry Fitzgerald with a mustache.
Okay.
Oh, no. So we're going to go.
When did Larry Fitzgerald ever have a mustache?
He has a mustache always.
What? Okay.
You got caught on the Hedberg thing, too. I never pictured Mitch Hedberg with a mustache, but apparently he has one a lot, or had one a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just looks like stubble to me.
Yeah, there's a mustache, not a mustache, or stubble. That's
Larry.
Larry never
strikes me as a guy that's got a mustache.
I know. Well, he doesn't have strong mustache energy. I'll give you that.
Okay.
So we go on tiebreaker here, Jarrett?
We're going tiebreaker here because we're running very short on time. And here we go. All right, ready?
Yeah.
The question is,
I'll send it to you on Teams, Jared.
Uh-huh. Oh God.
This is such a debacle every week.
Okay, Salvador Dali's famous painting, The Persistence of Memory, the one with the melting clocks. Mm-hmm. In what year did he paint it?
All right, my answer is in.
Salvador Dali, one of the great mustaches of all time.
I sent it to the wrong people.
Okay. I see it.
I don't... 1929.
All right, 1929. And Vince said 1910, and the answer is 1931.
No!
A tiebreaker!
A tiebreaker win! That's my first ever!
Oh, congratulations.
What a debacle that was.
You were close enough to win both showcases with that guess. Way
that was
to go.
Great. I had no clue.
Mustache, not a mustache. NFL hash marks is next. It's Bickley and Murata on this messy Tuesday. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
You know, I still got work to do. One of the defensive coaches came up to me, and it kind of made me mad that he was like, you know, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. You know, in my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, you know, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Was that Jim Schwartz?
Yes, sir.
It was DK Metcalf after last night's Monday night game. He talked about using all the teams that passed on him, all 31 teams that passed on him with draft picks in 2019 as fuel, got to pay him back. And then he shared that story, which was a little bit, I mean, I don't know who to believe. I wasn't there. The way Jim Schwartz described it, it didn't sound that bad. But Metcalf, the way he termed it, one of the defensive coaches came up to me and he kind of made me mad that he was like, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. The way Schwartz described it, he said, you're well on your way to being the next Calvin Johnson, but you're not quite there. Do you take that as a slight? Whatever it was, it backfired against Philadelphia.
Well, listen, the way Jim Schwartz said it matters in that. If he said that in a way that, yeah, I'm Mr. Pedigreed Coach, and I've been around the best, and I'm going to name drop this guy, and you're not quite there yet. I could imagine a young wide receiver going, why are you telling me what I'm not? What are you telling me what I'm close to being? And who are you anyways? That's the way Jim Schwartz can come off. He's just one of the, he's got a punchable face. He's been known to do dumb things and say dumb things at the wrong time.
True.
Do you remember the time when he was screaming at Jim Harbaugh on the other? It was the Lions versus the 49ers, and he was screaming at him at the other side of the field. Learn the bleeping rules, Harbaugh. Learn. He's a good coach who sometimes gets out of his lane, and I think he might have done that a little bit. Now, did DK Metcalf take a slight and turn it into a mountain? Yeah, of course. Newsflash. Athletes do that stuff, you know?
Yeah. And if you looked on Twitter last night, you found the Michael Jordan, and I took that personally meme everywhere.
Right.
Because of what we saw from The Last Dance. Whatever it was, great game for DK Metcalf. 10 catches, 177 yards, Seahawks win. On the other side of that is the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that's been hit hard by injuries, as many teams have been so far, but thinking that team was 2 years removed from a Super Bowl win and seeing what it's like now, it's night and day. And even though Doug Peterson has the goodwill of being the only Philadelphia Eagles head coach ever to guide a Super Bowl champion, he's very much in hot water because that team is in disarray. Carson Wentz is at the center of it. Here's the Eagles quarterback on why the team is not on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to answer. You know, I mean, it's something that I think every one of us is accountable for and wants to correct, you know, and it's, you know, you can say a lot of different things to answer that question, but at the end of the day, we got to be better. We got to be better, and those mistakes can't happen, and I got to be better making sure everyone's on the same page and everything going forward, and, you know, I'm excited to turn that thing around, turn this around, and, you know, like I said earlier, go surprise some people.
It doesn't look like it's going to get turned around, and watching the late stages of that game last night, Vic, mm-hmm. when it was all over, but the shouting and watching the Eagles offense and namely Carson Wentz continue to struggle. Brian Griese of the Monday Night Football broadcast team was saying some real curious stuff. You know, there was not a promise, but there was more than a strong suggestion. Hey, you're going to see some of Jalen Hurts in the Eagles offense, the guy that they invested a second-round pick in this last draft, even though Carson Wentz has this astronomical contract that could be an albatross for that organization moving forward. He got two snaps, I think, the whole night, Jalen Hurts. And Brian Griese is like, well, it's not all Carson Wentz's fault, and I agree with that, although Carson Wentz makes more head-scratching decisions than any quarterback I think I've ever seen. But then he suggested, well, what are you going to do? You're just going to throw Jalen Hurts in there to see what you got? Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you? And the argument of, well, they're still in the thick of the playoff race, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
If there's ever been a more pity playoff spot ever handed out in the NFL, I'd like to know what it is. Because one of four horrible football teams is getting in. And even if they get in, they're not winning anything.
No, but I will say this. I do think that if the Giants, depending on how they finish, I think the Giants and Washington's football team, they have a chance to paint this as a positive, and maybe more with Washington because they've got a terrific young running back, they've got a terrific young wide receiver, they've got Alex Smith playing quarterback. They're the kind of team that maybe, just maybe, people will look at a little more kindly than they would, say, the Cowboys or the Eagles. But I do agree with you. The quality of football in that division is a joke. The fact that one of those teams is going to get a home game is a joke. Not that that really matters in 2020 anyways, but still. And I think that a lot of what we saw, I didn't understand what they were trying to accomplish with Jalen Hurts. I was thinking that this had to be predetermined. There was no way. Why would you do that if you're Doug Peterson? Why would you give two snaps to Jalen Hurts and then suddenly go, okay, we don't want to see any more of that?
Well, I mean, why invest the draft pick in somebody like Jalen Hurts if you're married to Carson Wentz in the first place? Worst case scenario is you're a terrible team, and maybe you find your quarterback of the future, but you can't find the quarterback of the future if you're still going to give the ball to a guy who leads the league in turnovers to make more turnovers. I mean, what's going on there is mind-bogglingly bad.
Well, yeah, and it's what happened last night, and one of my Philly guys told me this, that the Super Bowl glow around Doug Peterson has been waning, obviously, throughout the course of the year, mm-hmm. and even last year. He's officially on the hot seat now. Last night marked the defining moment that now, if this doesn't get better now at the end of this year, he's probably getting fired in the offseason.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe he can save it by winning a terrible division, but they don't look like they're capable of winning that division. I mean, the Giants, for all their flaws, and Washington, for all their flaws, they still look better than the Eagles. One last note, another postponement of the Ravens-Steelers game, which is getting a lot of criticism from around the league. Adam Schefter was the first to break it that it's been pushed now to Wednesday afternoon, which did not sit well with Pittsburgh offensive lineman Zach Banner.
This is no promotion, man. I swear that. I got an ESPN notification that said to my phone, said the game got moved to Wednesday. I go to Twitter. I see Adam Schefter tweets that. I'm just like, dude, like, he found out before we found out. Like, I'm sitting at the house right now, and some of the guys are getting ready to go to the hotel the night before. And it's a circus, man. And it's just something that we have to deal with. We have no choice.
I mean, they have no choice, but they can bellyache, and they have bellyached the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I don't blame them one bit.
Yeah.
But with what the league did to the Denver Broncos for one positive test and three close contacts forcing them to play. You know, it's very punitive in nature what they did to Denver, and they're still talking about discipline for that position group.
Mm-hmm.
You've had how many positive tests for Baltimore? They obviously didn't handle the situation very well either.
Clearly they didn't.
Where's the penalty against them?
Yeah, well, because there's no proverbial smoking gun, but has the NFL even bothered to look is what I'm wondering. I do agree with what Adam Schefter said yesterday on one of the programs on television. He came out and said, don't expect every decision the NFL makes to make sense, but expect the show to go on. That's basically the bottom line, is that the NFL is going to find a way. They might be treating different games differently, but at the end of it all, the show is going to go on. So, yeah,
and
I don't know.
The fact that they're treating some games differently is frustrating to a lot of people.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not just the fans. Obviously, the players wearing the black and gold of the Pittsburgh Steelers are among those that are frustrated because they've had to deal with this twice now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even if they play Wednesday afternoon, they'll probably beat the Ravens by you know, four touchdowns.
Well, yeah,
and maybe
right.
That's the punitive nature in all of it.
And I think what the Steelers are doing, they're doing what any other team would do in these circumstances. They're bonding around the fact that they are just adaptable, that they're resilient to all these changes, cancellations, and they still find a way to win. So yeah.
Halfway through on this Tuesday, the Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata from the Akchian Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.